receive bhakti vedanta swami raj prabhupad ki jai jai om vishnu pad paramam supri prad kacharja ashto tarasat shri shimad bhakti siddhanta sarasati go swami raj prabhupad ki jai Adanta Koti Vaishnavrinda ki jai. Nama Charja Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai. Prem Sikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vashadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopinath Sham Kunaradha Kunigiri Govardhan ki jai. Vrindavan Tham ki jai. Pradip Tham ki jai. Jagannath Puri ki jai, Ganga Mai ki jai, Chamana Mai ki jai, Tulsi Devi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Samaveta Bhakta Brinda ki jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. Gauru Premanande.
Thank you all very much for coming. We'd like to begin today's program with an auspicious cell phone check. Check that your cell phones are in silent mode. Come on, we know you've got more cell phones than that. Okay. This is Bhagavad Gita as it is. 11th chapter, text 32. Shri Bhagavan Vacha,
Shri Bhagavan Vacha,
Kamyosmi,
Kamyosmi,
Loka,
Loka,
Shayaprit,
Shayaprit,
Pravritto,
Pravritto,
Lokam,
Lokam,
Samahartum,
Samahartum,
Iha,
Iha,
Pravritta,
Pravritta,
Utevi,
Utevi,
Shri
Bhagavan Vacha.
Shri Bhagavan Vacha. Kshayakritavito.
Kavosmi Lokasevitavito.
Lokan samahartu mihapravita.
Lokan samahartu mihapravita.
Te titvam na bhavishyanti sarve.
Rite titvam na bhavishyanti sarve.
Vastita pratyanike suyodha.
Ye vastita pratyanike suyodha.
Kalo. Shri Bhagavan Vacha.
Shri Bhagavan Vacha.
Kalo asmi lokakshaya kritta pravriddho.
Kalo asmi lokakshaya kritta pravriddho.
Lokan samahartum iha pravrittah.
Lokan samahartum iha pravrittah.
Rite api tvam na bhavishyanti sarve.
Rite api tvam na bhavishyanti sarve.
Vastitaha pratyanikeshu yodha.
Vastitaha pratyanikeshu yodha.
Shri Bhagavan Vacha.
Shri Bhagavan Vacha.
The personality of Godhead said.
The personality of Godhead said.
Kalaha.
Kalaha.
Time.
Time.
Asmi.
Asmi.
I am.
I am.
Loka.
Loka.
Of the world.
Of the world.
Shayakrit.
Shayakrit.
The destroyer.
The destroyer.
Pravrittaha.
Pravrittaha.
Great.
Great.
Lokan.
Lokan.
All people.
All people.
Samahartum.
Samahartum.
In destroying.
In destroying.
Iha.
Iha.
In this world.
In this world.
Pravrittaha.
Pravrittaha.
Engage.
Engage.
Rite.
Rite.
Without.
Without.
Except for.
Except for.
Api.
Api.
Even.
Even.
Tvam.
Tvam.
You.
You.
Na.
Na.
Never.
Never.
Bhavishyanti.
Bhavishyanti.
Will be.
Will be.
Sarve.
Sarve.
All.
All.
Ye.
Ye.
Who.
Who.
Avastitaha.
Avastitaha.
Situated.
Situated.
Pati anikeshu.
Pati anikeshu.
On the opposite sides.
On the opposite sides.
Yodha.
Yodha.
The soldiers.
The soldiers.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, time I am, the great destroyer of the worlds. And I have come here to destroy all people. With the exception of you, the Pandavas, all the soldiers here, on both sides, will be slain. Purport. Although Arjuna knew that Krishna was his friend and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was puzzled by the various forms exhibited by Krishna. Therefore, he asked further about the actual mission of this devastating force. It is written in the Vedas that the Supreme Truth destroys everything, even the Brahmanas. As stated in the Katha Upanishad 1.2.25. Yasya brahma chakatram cha upe pavata odanaha mrityur yasyo pasejanam ka itha deyatrasaha. Eventually, all the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and everyone else are devoured like a meal by the Supreme. This form of the Supreme Lord is the all-devouring giant. And here, Krishna presents himself in that form of all-devouring giant. Except for a few Pandavas, everyone who is present on that battlefield would be devoured by him. Arjuna was not in favor of the fight, and he thought it was better not to fight. Then there would be no frustration. In reply, the Lord is saying that even if he did not fight, every one of them would be destroyed, for that was his plan. If Arjuna stopped fighting, they would die in another way. Death could not be checked, even if he did not fight. In fact, they were already dead. Time is destruction, and all manifestations are to be vanquished by the desire of the Supreme Lord. That is the law of nature. Om Ajnana Jnirantasya Jnanjana Shalakaya Chakshur Nimitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupakada Mahyam Tathati Shapadantikam Vandeham Shri Buddha Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Shagrashatam Shahagana Raghunatam Hitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savakutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Shahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamstra He Krishna Karuna Sindha Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Mostute Tapta Kanchana Golangi Radhe Vrindavaneshari Prishabhansute Devi Pranamami Hoi Priye Vansha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindho Kevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Das Adigaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Shri Bhagavan Vaja Kalosni Loka Kshetra Vidho Lokan Samahartam Vihata Vidha Vritaiti Tvam Na Padishanti Sarve In this chapter, Lord Arjuna has asked Lord Krishna to show how he's present throughout the universe. And the Lord accordingly showed him the Vishwarupa, the great form in which everything in the universe, whatever there might be, could be seen in one place. Everything could be seen within Krishna. That was not possible by material vision. But Lord Krishna gave Arjuna divine vision by which he was able to see this. Divyam Dhanitaya. I'll give you spiritual. But then after some time, what Arjuna saw started to turn ghastly. He saw all of these soldiers rushing into the mouths of the universal form, like moths dashing into a fire. It seemed as though rivers and rivers of soldiers were rushing to destruction in the mouths of the universal form. He saw the soldiers being ground like powder between the teeth of the universal form. And some of them just hanging between the teeth. You get a little food caught between your teeth. But some of the soldiers were dangling like that. So Arjuna became terrified. He became overwhelmed with fear and asked the Lord what this form was that he was seeing. And what the mission was, of this ghastly form. So here in this verse, Lord Krishna answers, Kalosmi, I'm time. Kal, Kal means time. There are those who don't accept, of course, the existence of God. There's some outspoken scientists these days in England who's mounted a campaign. Oh, you stupid fools, you all believe in God. You're just cuckoo, deluded. There's no God. But what is God? God means that all-powerful presence, omnipotent, omnipresent, all-powerful. So here Krishna presents himself as time. And who can deny the supremacy of time? Which of us can say, I am more powerful than time? Time may go wherever he wishes, but he can't touch me. I'm exempt from the influence, from the power of time. I defy time. No. Lokam shayakrit. Time destroys everything. You get a new Lexus. So, first class, but over the course of a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, becomes dilapidated. Someone bangs into it here, someone nicks it here, someone dents it there. Starts falling apart from within. In 30 years, your Lexus is junk. Everything is subject to that destructive power of time. Our bodies start off as little babies, and then they grow into nice, healthy young bodies. And then at a certain point, much earlier than we think, things start to decay. Things start to turn decrepit. And finally the body is finished. It becomes ashes to ashes, dust to dust. Or the Vedic literature says it becomes earth or ashes or stool. If it's buried, it becomes earth over time. If it's burned, it becomes ashes. And if it's thrown to the vultures, as it is in some communities, or by chance it falls somewhere, it becomes stool. The vultures eat it and pass it out. That's the inevitable destination of this body. We're here in on the beach in Southern California, and all of these bronze gods go out there and surf. These handsome and beautiful young people. And in the end, ashes, earth, or stool. Why? Because of time. Time inevitably destroys everything. Sometimes maybe you pass by some industrial district and there are these old beat-up warehouses
with broken windows, dilapidated sides. You ever have to pass through such injuries? Mm-hmm. A little depressing somehow. But the whole world's like that. Everything starts out looking good. Well, some things at least start out looking good. And at the end, corroded. Time is corrosive. The very cells are corroded by time. Everything. The cosmologists say that the very planet on which we're standing will be annihilated by time. And the Bhagavad Gita also says, bhutla bhutla. It will all be destroyed by time. Countries, empires, the Egyptian Empire, the Greek Empire, the Roman Empire, the Dutch Empire, the Portuguese Empire, the Spanish Empire, the British Empire, all finished. They were great, they were ruling the seas, ruling the land, and now they're nothing. Now they're nothing. You go to the capitals of some of these places, you can't believe there's no trace that they were ever the glory of the world. Now they're just nothing. Now it's the American Empire. Our armies are everywhere, our products are everywhere, our wealth, our influence, our ideals are everywhere, America. And over time, America will be, has been. It'll be a former empire. Maybe it'll be cut up into little pieces so that it never causes trouble again. But one way or another, it will be reduced to insignificance. And we ourselves, we're little emperors of our homes, of our jobs, of whatever it is. We'll also be thrown out of the scene. And this is all done by time. Kalosmi lokakshay kritpravritto lokan samahartam iha pravritta. Everyone here, where Krishna is speaking on the battlefield, so many powerful men, Dronam, Bhishmam, Chajayadratam, great generals like Drona, right? The teacher of all the warriors, Bhishma, the venerable grandfather of all the fighters, Chajayadratha, Karna, these are all great heroes. We think of Alexander or Patton or someone like that. Great generals and heroes. Krishna says they're all dead. They're all destined to die. Ihapu. I've come, what is my mission? I've come to destroy all these people. Over time they've gathered, there were political intrigues and there were so many things that went on. There were schemes and plans and ambitions. Global politics. Now it's come to war. And Krishna says, everyone on both sides is destined to die. They may have their plans. My side will win. No, my side will win. But Krishna says, time has its own plan, and they're all going to die. We say, it's just a question of time. In time, every one of us will die. No one can say, no, I refuse. No, I'm the exception. I'm young. Jata svihi dhruvo mrityu. For one who's born, death is certain. No one can tell. This is your, yeah. Well, all right, if you believe it, it's true for you. Ever heard that? Yeah, well, if you believe it, it's true for you. Well, youngish. You believe it or not believe it. You can have your own philosophy. I will die. Death doesn't care for your philosophy. Jatasvi dhruvo. Dhruvo. For one who's born, death is certain. Death is certain. There's no question of if I believe it. Dhruvam janma mrtasya cha. And for one who dies, Krishna says birth is certain. It's either true or it's not true, but it's not, it doesn't depend on whether I believe it. That death is certain. You can take it as true, you can take it as untrue, but it doesn't matter which way you take it. Your belief doesn't count in the matter. Death doesn't think, well, he's a believer. Believer, unbeliever, everybody's dead. Because that's the law of time. And Krishna says it's also the law that for one who dies, birth is certain loss. Because it's the body that dies, the soul permanently existing. So, when the body is killed, he's not killed. But he has to go somewhere. He can't just float. But he goes to the next body. Krishna says, it's certain. Or you can accept Krishna's word for it, that it's certain. Or you can think about it and reach the same conclusion. Or you can think about it and reach a different conclusion. But what we think about it doesn't matter. Or has no effect on whether it happens or not. Not contingent upon our consent or belief. So death is certain. And Krishna says, I come to kill all of these people. Ritei pitam na pavishyanti sarve. All of them are going to die. Ritei pitam. Ritepi means, Ritepi Tvam has two meanings. One meaning is, except for you. Krishna is predicting or saying, he knows, he doesn't have to predict, that everyone will die except for you, Pandavas. A few of you will survive. Everyone else will be annihilated in this war. But for you, everyone will be killed. Ritei pitam also has another meaning. Without you. Arjuna, at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Nayotsya iti govindam, I shall not fight. How can I kill my relatives and my friends? Better to renounce the battlefield. Better to die unarmed. Throw down my weapons and let them kill me. Better that than to be an agent of their death. Now Krishna says, doesn't matter whether you're the agent of their death or not, they're all going to die. Ritei pitam, without you. Death doesn't depend on, I don't need you to kill them. They're dead men. That's decided. You can kill them, or I'll kill them some other way. They're all dead. Not that because I'll be non-violent, and therefore they won't die. I'll be non-violent, and therefore they won't die. They'll die.
with or without you. It retains its time. You're not actually the person who's doing it. Krishna says, I'm doing it. And because it needs to be done, because it's going to be done for the right cause, you can take the role of agent. Nimitta matra of a service. You can be my servant in the matter, you can be my agent. It's your duty as a soldier to fight against evil doers. So you can do it and get the credit, or you can run away and get the disgrace. But either way, they're going to die. That's the term. But don't be so puffed up and think, well, it's all up to me. Their fate is in my hands. Their life or their death depends on me. Rubbish. Krishna says it depends on me. And I'm determined that they're all going to die. It's already determined that everyone's going to die. It's just a question of when. Save the whales. You can't save even a single whale. You can't save a single guppy. We can't even save ourselves. Who can say, I'll save myself from death? What will I do? Raise a placard? Not meant for death, not meant for death. Death will blow away your placard and blow you away with it. There's none of us that can say, I'm exempt. And we can't save anyone from the influence of time. Not possible. We're taking time. But Krishna says, don't be falsely proud and think, I'll save them. It's up to me. And I've decided that they'll die in this war. Otherwise, it's decided that they'll die in any case. Vite pitam. Na bhavishyanti sarve. Ye vastita prachinikeshu yata. On both sides. This war was so designed that everyone would be annihilated. And the world is put together like that. Last time I was in London, we were driving near Piccadilly, and there was some, on one of the buildings, some young people had put a banner, stop the war now. There's billions of dollars invested in continuing whichever war they had in mind, probably the Iraq war. Billions of dollars invested, enormous political force, armies, power. And some dinky little British kids are going to stop the war now with their banner. We can't stop it. We're powerless. Even if we stop a war, in America, the Vietnam War became vastly, hugely unpopular. There were so many protests, stop the war, stop the war. So they stopped the war and started the next one. We went through a list of the wars that we had, conflicts, I think they're called, for political reasons. Those little conflicts in which we knock off a few hundred thousand human beings. In Iraq, the number is someplace over 1.2 million. It goes on. You can't stop war.
stop hunger, stop poverty, stop war, stop death. It's the nature of this material world. It's the place where everyone has to die, whether it's from war or starvation or overeating, old age or youth. Everyone becomes a meal for the form of time. So the Bhagavad Gita and the Vedic literature advises us that we should think about these things. We don't like to think about these things. The world prefers not to. When we think about how other people, how terrible it is that other people have to die. And we generally avoid dwelling on the thought that I'll also have to die. What is that? Hanyam Bhutani Kachanti Yamalai. Maharaj Yudhisthira was asked, what is the most wonderful thing? What's the most wonderful thing in this world? And he said, the most wonderful thing is that every day, so many of us are marching to the land of death. And the rest of us are hoping that we'll go under it. The rest of us are hoping to stay here. Oh, Krishna says, there's no question of staying here. There's no question. Every one of us will, suppose we think that it's so nice, we're going to beach, the ocean, the breeze, the art festival. But none of us can stay. Every one of us will be kicked out. Therefore Krishna says, don't try to stay in this material world. Tamasi, wow. Jump here. We should go to that place from which, having gone, we'll never have to return. Tadhama Padamam. That's the spiritual. As spiritual living beings, every one of us is by nature eternal. Every one of us lives forever. When the body is killed, we're not killed. But we can't live here. And why should we live here? The material world is so troublesome. So much anxiety, so much trouble, so much difficulty, so much tension, so much viciousness, so much competition, so much disappointment. Why should we stay? Why should we want to stay? The spiritual world is the place where what we're looking for is actually found. We're hoping for permanence here, and permanence is impossible. We're hoping for joyful life here, but our joyful life is polluted by misery. We're hoping for clear understanding here, but our understanding is so often confused. Therefore, Krishna says, come back to Maya and stay there forever in Krishna consciousness.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.
Said that for one who dies, one who dies has to take birth again. Is that in the spiritual world or material world? Which way is it, either one or the other? That means in the material existence. When one becomes Krishna conscious and goes to the spiritual world, there's no birth there. You don't have to be born there. You are there. It's kind of like a dream. When you wake up, you don't have to be born into awakened existence. That's your natural position. You just have to leave the dream behind, and there you are. That's the spiritual world. At the present moment, we're dreaming. I'm Jones, I'm Smith, I'm American, I'm Indian, I'm Patel, I'm this, I'm that. That's all dream. As soon as we wake up, we're not part of this material world.
But I thought you said that as sure as death is, there's no when we're alive, we will definitely die.
Yes, that's for sure.
I understand that, but I think you also
said that for one who dies, birth is certain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except if you become Krishna conscious. Abraham Bhuvana Loka Punar Varjana Arjuna. Then Punar Varjana
Mamu
Peti to Kantya Punarjana Vidyate. From the highest residence in the material world down to the lowest, they're all places of repeated birth and death. But Krishna says, one who comes to me, for him there's no longer birth or death. Good question. Something else.
Text 32, it says that with the exception of you, the Pandavas,
Pandavas are five brothers. There was a king, King Pandu. So King Pandu had five sons. Arjuna is one of them, to whom Krishna is speaking. And he had four brothers, Yudhisthira, Bhima, Nakula, and Sahadeva. So they're called the Pandavas, or the sons of Pandu. Except for these Pandavas.
This is the verse that Oppenheimer quoted, but I don't think he said it quite like this, did he?
I don't know that he quoted this verse. Robert Oppenheimer, the father of the atomic bomb, upon seeing the first atomic test at Alamogordo, I guess it was, in New Mexico, saw this huge brilliant light flooding in all directions and this enormous cloud of power. And he naturally thought of Bhagavad Gita. He was a student of Upanishads and Bhagavad Gita. So he thought of Krishna's, what else could he compare to to what else could he compare this powerful force that he saw unleashed before him? He compared it to the universal form described in this chapter. If thousands of suns were to burst at once upon the horizon, their effulgence might resemble that of the universal form. And still that little bomb of his was only a tiny fraction of a fraction of a fraction of Krishna's energy. That we know that the sun is full of power and effulgence. The scientists say there's always these eruptions and so on. So what is your atomic bomb? Even now the atomic bomb is old technology. We have hydrogen bombs and so on. But compared to the sun, what is that? Just compared to the destructive nature, the destructive power of nature. That bomb could destroy an island. But the cataclysmic powers of nature can cause far greater destruction than that. Ultimately, they destroy the whole planet, the whole universe. How much power time has? No one escapes it. When the atomic bomb was released upon Hiroshima, some people survived. The bomb was not all powerful. But time is all powerful. All of those people are dead now. And we'll also be dead. Means this body will be dead. But the consciousness within the body can never be killed. So while we have this life, our purpose is to understand our actual identity and become free from this cycle of birth and death.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the good class. People seem, like you said, people don't want to talk about or think about the point of death, but I know when my mother had a stroke and she was at home and gradually dwindling, she knew death was coming, and during her whole life she practiced law. She did get to do Prabhupada's legal work for him. But when it got to that point, she knew she was dying, so I read a little bit of Bhagavad Gita every day and finished the whole Krishna book as she was trying to chant because she knew it was coming. So actually realizing that death is coming can be a great impetus to try to make the connection with Krishna stronger.
Yes. For one who's Krishna conscious, death is not the end. Or for anyone, death is not the end. But the materialist is holding on to material things even while they're being ripped out of his hands or turned to powder. He's holding on to, he's hoping his body will survive. They're undergoing, you know, an operation. Please, please let me have this operation because it will extend my life another 2 months. My miserable life. You know, you'll cut out 80% of my stomach and you'll feed me through tubes, but then I can have this operation and I can live another 2 months. Desperately hoping to survive. Struggling to survive.
Medicine is spent in the last 4 to 6 months of people's lives, so they're trying to spend so much just to extend that last...
Yeah. However miserable, let me go on living. Because we want to live. It's our nature to live. Death is against our constitution. It's unconstitutional. But we can't mount a legal case against it. Rather, we have to come to our constitutional position. That means to give up our material identity, I'm this, I'm that, and come to our spiritual identity. I'm not this body, I'm spirit, soul within the body. I'm an eternal part of Krishna, eternal servant of Krishna. For another gentleman who did that, then there's no more birth or death. Your mother's very fortunate.
She was talking one day, she was, the caregiver said, who are you talking to? And she's looking up in the corner, she says, Prabhupada. So she had an auspicious passing.
Yeah. Yeah, if I'm always thinking about death, I'll forget to live. It's said that one who wants to enjoy sense gratification should never think that he's going to die. If you want to enjoy, then forget about death. Death spoils the party. There's the story of Damocles, we call him. He was made some kind of envious remark about the king. You're eating so nicely, and you have all these comforts, and you know, the dancing girls, and all the perks that the kings used to get back in those days. Now a king just went on a bicycle or something. In those days. So the king said, yes, we'll arrange for you to enjoy all of this. Sat him down at a banquet, gold plates and gold cups and everything overflowing with the best food and all the beautiful girls in attendance, and a sword hanging above his head by a thin hair. Told him, enjoy. Where is the enjoyment if I could die at any moment? Therefore, a person who wants to make spiritual progress should think, I may die at any moment. And that's the actual position. And a person who wants to enjoy this body should think, I'll never die. Otherwise, how will you enjoy it? To enjoy, one has to become a fool. Yes.
Another conclusion that people make when they think about death, and that's, well, I'm only going to live once, so I better enjoy as much as possible.
I'm only going to live once, so I better enjoy as much as possible. If I have only one life to live, let me live it as a blonde. There are two problems with that. The first is that the material world is constructed in such a way that you won't enjoy. You'll try to enjoy, but it's constructed in such a way that our enjoyment must be spoiled. Now, if I had money, and then you get money, and everybody's trying to take it away from you, and you're always, you know, you're driving around in a bulletproof car with guards, and still, you know, somebody tastes your food before you eat it, and you don't know if you have any friends because it's the friend that's trying to get my money, or is he a real friend? Or if I only had this beautiful girl, then I'd be happy. And then you get the beautiful girl, and then you're always in anxiety about who's looking at the beautiful girl and who's looking back at. One way or another, whatever it is in this material world, the material world is constructed in such a way that it will always be problematic. It was problematic 5,000 years ago, it was problematic 500 years ago, it's problematic now, and it will be problematic into the indefinite future. Enjoyment is a figment of the imagination. We'll get some enjoyment, but the enjoyment will be mixed with misery, mixed with trouble. And enjoyment mixed with trouble is trouble. Prabhupada gives the example of sweet rice. mixed with sand. You take your nice sweet rice, nice pudding, and you just add probably a teaspoonful of sand. Mix well. And you say, well, you take the good with the bad, but you won't take the good with the bad. Well, it's gritting on your teeth. You won't enjoy it. And that's the material world. Janamritu, Jayadi, Dukkha, Dosham, and Darsham. There are four problems, ultimately. The problems we read about in the newspaper, this war and this recession. But the real problems are birth, death, disease, and old age. Those are the problems. And those problems cannot be stopped in this material world. No one will stop death. No one will stop disease. No one will stop old age. No one will stop rebirth by any material means. You know, go to the health food store. What is it? Eat right, stay fit, die anyway. That's the first thing, that we can't stay. We can't stay. So what was their argument? That
enjoy as much as possible.
Enjoy as much as possible because you only have this one life. So the first thing is, your enjoy as much as possible is a doomed project. The more you try to enjoy, the more you'll suffer. They're flip sides of the same coin. And the second thing is that your assumption, I only have one life, is mistaken. For one who dies, birth is certain. I only have one life. How do you know you only have one life? You're thinking only one life. But there's a second, and a third, and a fourth, and innumerable lifetimes, and what you're doing in this lifetime affects your next lifetime. It's a foolish mentality. It's a reckless mentality. I'm only a kid once, so let me enjoy it. So why should I do my homework? Why should I study? Why should I do anything like that? I'm only a kid once. All right, then you're going to be a kid once and a failure for the rest of your life. Because you're only looking at your little tiny slice of time as if it were everything. You're looking at one little lifetime and saying, that's all there is. Okay, don't take it from us that there's another lifetime, but isn't it worth thinking about at least before you just assume that, well, there's only one life? Maybe you should look at that assumption. Maybe you should examine that assumption and test it for truth. Mm-hmm.
I'm feeling very confused. Is it pointless to take care of our health and our loved ones and to be kind and to promote no war, if possible, or, you know what I mean, while we are here, I'm not saying that we're never going to die, but it's confusing, this concept that because we're going to die, that everything we do here doesn't matter?
That's unfortunate. It is confusing. It seems that everything here has great meaning. Who's elected president? What political, what laws our government enacts, which way our health goes, all of that seems so significant. But seen from the larger perspective of time, it's very small. It's very, very small. This is one lifetime of millions and millions and millions of lifetimes that we have. And now I'm an American, and it's very important that Obama be elected. It's very important that health care legislation be passed or defeated. So many things are so is very important. So many things are. And death comes and all is reduced to insignificance. All of the things that are so important to us are reduced to insignificance by death. The real important thing is to get free from this material world. That's absolutely important. To be restored to our natural position is absolutely important. And the other things are relatively important. Relatively important means small. All these freedom movements and save the whales and save the environment and clean up the oil spill and all that. As important as it seems in the material context, it's insignificant in the larger context. One huge oil spill in one little ocean, on one little planet, in one little universe, out of millions and billions of universes. Our universe is like a mustard seed. You know how big a mustard seed is. It's like one mustard seed in a big bag of mustard seeds. On that little mustard seed, there's an oil spill. And we're dedicating ourselves to stopping the petroleum industry. And all these great movements, great enterprises, great dramas of this world, in comparison to the imperative of getting free from material existence. Now, in the context of becoming Krishna conscious, going back to Godhead, then everything takes its place. Family life has its place. Having a house has its place. Doing my work has its place. Getting up in the morning, brushing my teeth. Everything has its place in relationship to that greater reality. Divorce it from that greater reality is like vapor, it's meaningless. Connected with that reality, and it has some meaning. Why this material world was created at all? Because you wanted it. We wanted to enjoy apart from Krishna. That's not possible. So the illusory world is created where we can all be little enjoyers. Like a child. A child wants the moon. I want the moon. I want the moon. Mother says, you can't have the moon. The moon is very big. It's so many thousands and millions of miles away. I want the moon. I want the moon. So then the mother is very intelligent. The mother gives the child a little mirror. See, now you have the moon. I have the moon. I have the moon. It's illusion. He has a little piece of glass and he's thinking he has the moon. That's our position. We want to have something, own something, control something, enjoy something. It's not our position. The real owner is Krishna. The real enjoyer is Krishna. And we're parts of Krishna. When we are connected to Krishna, then we take part in Krishna's enjoyment. Just like the hand. When the hand is connected with the body, when the stomach enjoys the food, then the hand will enjoy the food. But if the hand thinks, why should the stomach get everything. Why should I be dependent on the stomach? Stomach, I do all the work and the stomach just sits there. I'm going to go it alone. I'm going to be my own man. What will happen? And we'll get weak and die. So it's not possible. If you're a hand, you can't enjoy independently. Finally, you have to decide, no, let me give food to the stomach, then I'll be happy. But when we come to that realization, then, when I give pleasure to Krishna, then I'll enjoy it also. Then. Otherwise, we'll get the illusion of happiness, this material world. It's not the real thing. Therefore, we're trying to grab it, and we're not getting it. Because it's not there. But why are we? Because we want to. That's called our diseased condition. And a healthy condition is Krishna consciousness. Something else? Mm-hmm.
Is time finite or infinite?
Is
time.
Time?
Finite
or infinite? Ultimately, time is infinite because Krishna is time and Krishna is infinite. And in the spiritual world, time is exhibited without limit. There is eternal time. But here, time is measured. If you want, no one gets infinite time here. You hardly get any time. In the spiritual world, there's unlimited time. Yes?
And there are some extraterrestrial sources that say that this planet should only have 500 billion people, half a billion people, because that's the long-term material balance for a planet this size. So I ask you, what form of devouring do you think might occur in the future to bring that number down to what we have?
There are those extraterrestrial authorities who say that the ideal planet for the size of population of this planet is 500 million people, and what might happen in the future to bring it down to that. It'll go below that. The whole planet will be destroyed ultimately, and it'll be down to zero. How time does it? Is described in detail in Srimad Bhagavatam how the universe will be annihilated. 11th canto. 11th canto, 12th canto. You can read.
Can you summarize that?
Floods, fires, devastation on a grand scale. You can get these little fires here in Southern California, and floods and stuff, and a few houses roll down the hillside every couple of years. That's small time. Think in terms of whole planets going underwater, getting scorched. When Krishna wants to devastate, he does it grand scale.
Maharaj, just picking up on one of the last questions. So we chose to come here, which of course indicates that we have some degree of free will. Mm-hmm. Krishna identifies himself with time, which also indicates that his expression as time is part of his free will. He chooses to be time, and he chooses to act as time. So maybe I can buy into the idea that I have some desire to be independent of God. I chose to come here and be separate from God. But it seems as though Krishna has to own some responsibility for making this world so macabre and for making this world so torturous.
Of course, he owns the responsibility for making this world the way it is. Who owns the responsibility for the prison being miserable? Government. they're the ones who put steel beds in there and rooms with bars and nasty guards and crummy food. They're the ones who are responsible for it. But who are the ones who acted in such a way as to go there? And is it the government's fault? I robbed the bank and it's the government's fault. When I act illegally, then I get, what do I have to do? The expression is, you have to do time.
Mark, just to really rivet this in my head so I get it. Okay, so governments build prisons. Of course, we do have a prison reform movement. And if those prisons are deemed to be, by some objective standard, unnecessarily harsh, that's considered to be a fault on the part of the government. So I'm going to just throw it out there. I have some difficulty in understanding how God is all good and all powerful and all benevolent.
Because you're a criminal. That's the criminal mentality. There was some sociological study done of prison inmates. And practically across the board, they were the good guys, and the government was mean. Al Capone, the archetypical criminal who was the head of the mob in Chicago and running liquor rackets and gambling rackets and arranging for people to get cement feet and be thrown in the river and so on. So when they finally threw him in jail on tax evasion, so he was interviewed, and he was grousing that, you know, why should I be treated like this? All I ever did was try to give the people of Chicago a good time. In our own estimation, we're all good guys. But what are we doing in this material world? We're good by constitution, but by association with material nature, we're in a wrong position, artificial position. Therefore, we're suffering. In one sense, you complain about it, it's like complaining about a nightmare. Just wake up. Don't complain about how big the tiger is, how terrible his teeth are, why you have to run so fast. Wake up.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you, thank you.
Maharaj, that means, in other words, you are saying that we have to shift our thinking.
Yeah. From material consciousness to Krishna consciousness. From dreaming, I'm this body, to becoming awake and understanding I'm spirit, soul, I'm part of the parcel of Krishna. That's this chanting. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, to awaken us through our spiritual consciousness. Shall we? Yes?
One question, Maharaj. In the words, when he says, with exception of you,
Representing all the devotees? Ritaiti, Tom, with the exception of you. Of course, in the immediate context means everyone's going to die except for you, Pandavas. But otherwise, yes, you can take it that way. Except for the devotees, everyone has to die. Of course, devotees also have to die. Body will be finished. But devotees die to live. Because after dying, they don't have to come back and repeat birth and death. It said that for those who have no interest in hearing about Krishna, developing Krishna consciousness, every time the sun rises and sets, it subtracts one day from their life. Time is measured. This is one measurement of time, the rising and setting of the sun, 24 hours. Every time the sun rises and sets, it subtracts a day from our body. Except if we're Krishna conscious. Then every time the sun rises and sets, it adds a day to your life. Not materially, that you're going to live for 80 years, now you live to 81. But you live forever by Krishna consciousness. Okay, thank you all very much.
Wow, how long is that? 6 months. Oh.